right. Good evening. My apologies for the lateness. I was on a radio interview and couldn't escape out of it. Welcome to everyone. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome everybody to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 19th of August 2024. And welcome to those people who are in the public gallery. Being now 5:33pm, I officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, our NAB Coordinator, Ms Ruckhart, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton, and we have apologies this evening from Councillor Midgley. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 14, held on the 5th of August 2024, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 12th of August in relation to the future development at the Kingborough Sports Centre. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Declaration of interest in relation to an item in closed session 21.1, and I'll be staying in the room.
Thank you. No other declarations. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open to closed session? No, thank you. We've got the mysterious turning off of the microphones happening again. Page two, questions without notice from the public. Remind members of the public, in relation to questions without notice, there is to be no discussion, preamble or embellishment of any question asked without notice, and the chairperson may require that a member of the public immediately put the question. Having said that, is there any member of the public gallery here today who'd like to ask a question? Thank you. If you would like to come up to the microphone, and even though we know who you are, could you please state your name and your suburb before proceeding to your question, please.
Good evening once again. My name's David Grace. Mayor, I have some questions regarding the passing of the council to give the block of land to the Jack Jumpers. Mayor, if I can start, officers report on the 11th of June. The purpose of the report is to be considered lease of land in the Kingborough Sports Precinct for the state government. The purpose of constructing a performance training centre for the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers. My question is, Mayor, could you advise what consultation was carried out to inform the ratepayers and residents of Council's intention to give the block of land away? Well,
I can answer that. So there are processes under the Local Government Act that we are required to follow in the event of disposing of any council-owned land, and we followed those processes as required by the Local Government Act, and that involved going to That involved going to community consultation and asking for members of the community to lodge any objections or support for that. We did do that. We received six objections to that, and they were put in the meeting papers along with the recommendation when we considered that matter as a council, and councillors had the ability to read all of those. They also had all full copies of those representations. The main thrust of those were in relation to what the club, the Hobart Radio Remote Control Car Club, where they would be going. Council did fully consider all of those, along with following the process that we have to legally.
Mayor, I believe the other question is regarding the advertising that was in the public notice of the paper. It said in on the application lease for that land. It didn't mention purchasing the land. I guess it did say lease and a word disposal, but
yes.
I guess now in this council it would be twisted so that the disposal we wouldn't understand. My question is that the case? I mean, we didn't understand that disposal meant that you could do what you like.
Okay. Mr. Smee, could you assist us with that one, please?
Thank you, Mayor. The advertising used the wording dispose of land, and that is a terminology that is used in the Local Government Act. Council has that ability to dispose of land by means of either lease, sale or transfer, and those terms are defined in the Local Government Act.
Yes, Mayor, I have to accept that. I go back, Mayor, regarding a minute back in 2020, October the 26th, where we were disposing of land on Bruny Island, the Margate to Channel area. One of the councillors, in fact, asked a question about the how we dispose of the land, what your future use, etc., etc. But it says here, but from officer's response, that council, before they recommend to dispose of any land, do a thorough search of that land to make sure the value of that land, the benefit of that land, and they also, the council employs a consultant to assist them through the process. Now, that's not happened, Mayor, at this case. There's been
our system. You have to turn your light on again. We have it. My apologies to everybody who's watching. We have an issue with our microphone system that we're looking to replace. So the microphones are turning themselves off periodically, which is very annoying for everybody.
Anyway, Mayor, I question the legal part of whether this was properly advertised. According to our staff, they say it is in accordance with the Local Government Act, but it's misleading because if I've got a copy of the sign that was on the site and it doesn't say clearly to the public that we are going to give that block of land away.
We're
going to sell it.
Yeah, Mr. Smee, could you assist us with that, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. The intent that was advertised was to dispose of the land. Now, that, as I have said, dispose can mean a number of things, and that was what was advertised. And part of the consideration of council was in relation to that method for disposal. Now, whether that be a lease, a transfer or a sale, all of those things were considered by council in its final deliberation. but the advertising was correct in terms of the requirements of the Act and in relation to the requirement to obtain an independent consultant's report. We obtained an independent valuation and that was provided to councillors prior to the meeting.
Okay, well, I could, my next question is, same report, at the meeting on March the 18th, 2024, in closed session, Council unanimously resolved to support, in principle, the potential location of the Jack Jumper High Performance Training Centre within the Kingborough Sports Precinct, and authority, this is the one I'd like you to clearly listen to, and the authority to the GM to provide the landowner consent to lodge a development application for the project. Well, my question is, who then is the landowner?
So council is the landowner, but if somebody wants to lodge a development application for our land when it is in our possession, then they require the consent of the general manager, and that's according to the Local Government Act. And so we were asked, while we went through the process of the public engagement, we were also asked whether we could provide, in principle, support to allow the general manager to provide that consent so that the state government could continue with their process without further delay. This is a project that had a lot of delays at Glenorchy when it was going to be constructed out there, and so the state government was very keen, as were the Jack Jumpers, to ensure that the process was as smooth as possible from our perspective, and so that was an appropriate process to follow.
Well, Mayor,
I don't know whether Mr. Smee, would you like to add anything to that, or the CEO?
Thank you, Mayor. Only that a development application can be lodged on any property with the owner's consent, and in this instance, the ownership of the land doesn't get transferred until it's registered on title, so it is appropriate that authority was given to the general manager to be able to sign a development application on behalf of the state government, given that the land transfer won't officially occur until there is a subdivision and a registration of that on the title through the Lands Titles Office.
Well, I didn't hear a word because I can't hear from here, but anyway.
So what Mr. Smee said was that he reinforced the advice that I gave you, and that is that this is a common practice where a landowner will receive a request to lodge a development application on their land, and that's what occurred in this place. So in this case.
Can I ask the question then, why would the general manager be authorised to allow a landowner to lodge an application?
Because that is what's the process articulated under the Local Government Act, and that occurs when somebody wants to do a development on land that is owned by council, or, as Mr. Smee indicated, on anybody's land. So you may own a piece of land and your next-door neighbour may want to build on your land, and you would have to give, as landowner, the consent for your neighbour to build on your land.
Well, I think it's. I'd like our audit panel to personally look into this procedure.
So you are able to write to the audit panel and request that if you would like to do that.
My other question is, regarding the car club. I listened at the meeting and I listened again on tape today where council staff stated they were doing everything possible to work within to help the car club.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could you tell me then, Mayor, and this is a question, I guess, why didn't they support them when they moved onto the property, cut the gate, cut the chain on the gate, and left the gate opened and never locked the gate? When they told the president of the car club that they would secure the site once they finished there.
Okay, Mr. Smee, I believe you might be able to help us with that one, please.
Through you, Mayor, the chain wasn't cut. It was access was required in order to undertake some investigations, and it is unfortunate that it wasn't locked afterwards.
Yeah, well, I've got photos to the content of that saying and showing that the lock was cut, the chain was cut, and there was black tape, and I've got that photo, and you're saying it wasn't. So you're saying you're helping these Hobart car club?
So, Mr. Grace, yes, as previously indicated, our staff have been working very hard to find alternatives for the car club, and that work continues.
Mayor, I can argue all night on it because I'm
well,
just...
I'm not going to allow you to do that because this is question time.
I'm just saying, but I still don't think... In fairness, I don't think we've got suitable answers because I still don't believe that this has been advertised and letting the public know what the council's intentions are. And, Mayor, can I say this?
Mr. Grace, I'm going to stop you there. I'm not going to sit here and let you repeat consistently that council has acted inappropriately in relation to the process that we have to go through under the Local Government Act, because that is offensive to the staff who have worked on this and also to the councillors who have ticked off on this as well. We have followed the Local Government Act procedures. Those processes have all been documented and we have an outcome. And I appreciate that you don't agree with that outcome, but it does not permit you then to cast aspersions on the staff and this council that we have acted inappropriately. That is not the case. Do you have another question?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I mentioned back about the report back in 2000. When we were dealing with public land. But obviously, Mayor, we haven't learnt from that.
I'm not aware of the situation. I wasn't on council in 2000, and I was not.
It's a council document. It's minutes.
I haven't gone back and read the minutes from 11 years before I was on council, so I can't assist you with that. But I will say again that the processes for disposal of public land are well articulated and very clearly in the Local Government Act, and we have followed those appropriately.
That's okay. I understand that.
Thank you.
I do. But the other thing is, Mayor, where in your Kingborough Sports Precinct Future Direction Plan or any of the strategic plans that this council has undertaken in the last 12 months or so, state, and saying that with the committee that was set up by council to a few councils was on that committee to have a look at the pros and cons at that sports centre, what we should be doing and what we shouldn't. Where in the reports, I can't see anywhere in our reports, the Kingborough Sports Preset Plan, anything else, where it states that council can sell or give away land in that precinct. All I read is that there's high demands for the sports complex, 21, 22, 25 issues was raised and sent forward to this council for consideration. None of that was basketball. It was all other sports.
So there has been very, very positive feedback that Council has received from the community in relation to the announcement that the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre is going to be built in Kingborough. I can say that without any doubt. People are very excited about it. There are huge benefits for the community in terms of the economic benefits of having more people working in Kingborough, because it is going to be the administrative home of the Jack Jumpers. But in addition to that, it will free up valuable court space at the Kingborough Sports Centre, which is currently taken up by the Jack Jumpers who have been training there for the last 3 years. So there are a range of benefits for having the Jack Jumpers here, and the freeing up of that court space is a very important one, and it means that we can have an expansion of additional clubs coming into the Kingborough Sports Centre for things like pickleball, which is a growing sport. The demand for basketball has increased phenomenally across the state since the Jack Jumpers started in the NBL, and it continues to. It's one of the most popular sports now in Tasmania, and so there is now an opportunity for children to have access and adults to have more access to courts as the Jack Jumpers go into their high performance centre.
Mayor, I disagree with that, but that's fine.
Okay, that's okay. That's your right to disagree, but could I have another question, please?
Yes. I heard on the television when the...
Microphone.
I heard on TV, prime time TV on the news, when the Jack Jumpers coach came back from America to Tasmania and he was interviewed. And he slated in some words about the conditions that his team have to play in is disgusting. Oh, I'm not quite the words, I can't remember the words, but he wasn't praising any of our facilities up. Now, whether he meant whether he meant Kingborough was disgusting or other areas, I don't know.
Yep.
But he was critical.
Yep, no, that... I'm aware of the remarks that you refer to. He didn't use the term disgusting. What he indicated, Coach Scott Roth, was that the current training facilities that the Jack Jumpers use for all of their training up at the Kingborough Sports Centre is not of the high standard that you would expect an elite level sports team to be using, and he is quite correct in that. If you go around Australia, a lot of the other, all of the other basketball teams have their own high performance centres, as do other sports codes, where they have their own gym and their own training facilities and their own offices for all of their different health professionals and the like. They're in a situation at the moment where they are sharing courts, two courts at the Kingborough Sports Centre, which are, I would say, semi-private. Most training sessions for elite sports clubs are done in private so that people can't go and spy on them and feed that information to other teams. So they have semi-private courts there. They have only a couple of small offices, and they have a situation where they don't even have rooms for their separate rooms for their players to have their massages in. And so they actually have a situation where you've got players eating their lunch and somebody else over the other side of the room having a massage because they need it for their it's a remedial massage for their recovery and for injuries and so on. That is not what you expect for an elite level team, and what the coach was saying is it doesn't help when they're trying to recruit players from overseas or from other teams. One of the first things that those players look at is the quality of the training facilities that they're going to be spending a lot of time in. Yes, the team has been very, very successful in the last 3 years, but they need to have facilities that are suitable for them, and quite frankly, even though you're not, I'm delighted that they are making their Kingborough their home for the High Performance Centre.
Well, I'm quite happy to stand before this council and say I'm not.
I know. We've put that on record.
And I don't pull no bones on that. Just thank one you. Other and I'll finish. Mayor, I was a bit disappointed in your statement that you made as a leader of this council saying that you support the Jack Jumpers because they buy houses or they're buying houses or something. I haven't got it in front of me. What I am saying to you, Mayor, what about all our families, and I'll be 80 soon, and all the years that we've paid rates within this municipality, we've played sport, and we've played in appalling conditions. We've got the football ground up here with the Kingston Tigers and whatever. Look at the facilities they've got. Pretty poor, but they're not complaining. And I think it's disgusting to think that because one or two...
Point of order. We need a question.
Thank you.
Point of order.
Yes.
We need a question.
Well... Sorry, Councillor Fox.
Well, the question is... Okay, thank you for reminding me, Councillor Fox. How many Jack Jumpers that's playing in this Tasmanian side are actual Tasmanians? And how many live in Kingborough?
I haven't done an assessment of
well,
the...
Mayor, I thought you
excuse me. Hang on. Mr. Grace, you've asked a question. I'm now answering it. So I've listened to your question, so you can do the courtesy of listening to my answer. The statement that you are referring to is that I have said many times that there are a large number of the players who have chosen to make Kingborough their home. They have either bought or rented properties in Kingborough, they have enrolled their children in schools, and they have become part of the Kingborough community. And the feedback that I receive from people in the community is that's great because kids go to the local shopping centre and they walk past their hero basketball players and they get a real buzz out of that because they look up to these people. They've become part of the Kingborough community. According to the Jack Jumpers, 80% of the players or coaching staff live in the Kingborough municipality, 80%. And so they had a strong preference for the High Performance Centre to be built in Kingborough rather than to be co-located with My State Bank Arena, which would involve far more travelling for them, which is obviously where they play their games. So now we have a high performance centre that is going to be co-located with their admin facilities and close to where the majority of them are living. And I think that is a great thing for the players and to support their families to be part of the Kingborough community.
Thank you very much for listening to me. And what just one is Minister Street, is he the Minister of Sport dealing with this in Kingborough?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the community? Thank you.
My name's Julian Punch. I'm involved in the Kingborough Residents' Voice group.
And you're from, is it Longley? You live in Longley, correct?
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm a ratepayer in Longley. I've been here over 25 years. I've listened to the discussion about the Jack Jumpers, and I really question the response. Two things that have been said, and that is referring to the land as owned by council.
Microphones are going off again.
I really think in the spirit of consultation and community development that that sense of ownership needs to be developed within the community, particularly, and the question about feedback at the moment that you referred to, Mayor, is I'd like to see that qualified in some sort of qualitative consultation as to who the feedback's coming from, what is the feedback. We've seen the whole discussion about Macquarie Point.
Yeah, sorry, so could I just have the question, what is the feedback that has been received?
What is the feedback that you are referring to in terms of qualitative consultation?
Sure.
Who is the feedback coming from?
Yep.
What is the feedback?
So the feedback has been that we went out to public consultation. We asked the community if they were happy with us disposing of the land in order to build the High Performance Centre, and we only received 6 objections from a total number of over 40,000 residents. So that would indicate that there was not a huge amount of concern about disposing of that land for the High Performance Centre, and as I indicated, the majority of those 6 people in their responses were not... Some people went to the trouble of saying that they did not object to the land being disposed, but what they objected to was the relocation of the car club. So they said they were happy for the land to be disposed and for the High Performance Centre to be built, but they didn't like the fact that we were booting out the car club. Over and above that, there has been very positive feedback on social media pages about following the announcement, and over many, many months when it first became known. I get stopped in places where I go around the community and people tell me about the excitement that they have about the Jack Jarpers High Performance Centre coming to Kingborough, and I can tell by the nodding that's happening with councillors as well that they get that same feedback. So we're being told directly by people that they welcome this and they see it as a positive benefit for Kingborough.
I'd like to see that in scientific research terms. And that's the process of consultation.
So we went through, thank you.
Effective, efficient and appropriate. And that's the standard that is accepted, particularly in terms of government form.
So in the under the Local Government Act, as I've previously mentioned, we have a prescribed process that is legislated that we must follow. We followed that. That process told us that only 6 people objected. So consequently, councillors made the decision that we have made for the High Performance Centre to be built, for the land to be provided for that to be built.
I'd still like to see that in scientific terms as to how it was done.
Okay, so you
and
can...
That's a question.
So that information is available on the last council agenda where the objections were summarised. And as I said, there were 6. I'm not rounding it up. I'm not rounding it down. There were 6 objections. They were all in the last agenda, so you can access those online.
That is not in terms of an efficient, effective and appropriate consultation process.
Thank you for your feedback.
Thank you. I mean... The difficulty that we're experiencing here is that there is an environment where people are going to bed hungry, homeless and cold.
Yep.
And these people are voiceless. One of the meetings that we attended here one night, there was a woman who drove her car in, parked at the back of the council chambers, and I drew it to some of the council's attention. And she was homeless. She was a homeless woman. And that, you know, is a sign within the council property is that's got to be taken seriously.
Point of order, Mayor. Can we have a question?
Pardon? Okay.
Okay, I've got a point of order.
Given the high rate of living inflation costs affecting women and children in the community, what effective, efficient and appropriate alleviation savings and strategies are being taken by council? As I've said, people are going to bed hungry, homeless and cold this night, and there has been a really strong political attempt in terms of the Macquarie Point and the Jack Jumpers issue, the ratepayers' housing area over in the high school area, and in the Kingston Shopping Centre, which was recently sold to overseas companies, and there is a whole issue. There's a whole feeling within the municipality that people are that's not being considered by council. What's happening to so many people in terms of the alleviation? So my question is, will council develop a strategy in relation to those people that's effective, efficient and appropriate?
Thank you for the question. As you'd be aware, council is only one part of the process of ensuring that everybody has appropriate accommodation. We are not service providers of accommodation of any sort. That is not our role as local government, but our role, as outlined in a housing strategy that we put forward in about middle of last year, is to advocate very strongly to the state and federal governments to provide sufficient funding for other community organisations or Homes Tasmania to be able to build the appropriate level of social and affordable housing that is required. But over and above that, Council works very closely in partnership with a range of community organisations that operate in Kingborough, where we can assist those who, for example, Kingborough Helping Hands, who does incredible work with ensuring that people have enough food on their table. They help thousands of people every year by assisting them with food, with clothing, and so on. And so, as an organisation, as a council, we work closely with organisations like that to ensure that they can continue to deliver their services. And I know that, for example, that number of our councillors go along to the events that Kingborough Helping Hands has, help them to raise funds, make donations personally, and try and ensure that they've got the resources that they need, because they're the ones that are at the front line of delivering services. I don't know whether our CEO would like to add anything to my answer.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, not a lot more that I can add. We do work in partnership with a number of community organisations to support our communities and make sure that through their great work, that we're supporting our various members of the community that may be suffering hard times. Additionally, we do work closely with Homes Tasmania. Even as recently as today, I was speaking to Homes Tasmania about the development at Huntingfield and what they're doing there, which includes social housing as part of that development. Like the Mayor said, whilst we don't necessarily deliver the programs directly, we do create environments that help work through our partners to deliver outcomes for our communities most in need.
Just pop your microphone on again.
I've asked my question and I would like an answer to it in terms of formally, how can we improve? I take your point about the organisations that you are funding. However, most of those organisations have certainly talked to us and said that they are under huge stress and they don't have the resources that they need to cope with the program that's happening statewide here. And I take the point that there are many, many points of government, but that's adding to the problem, because we've got federal, state, local government and various houses, and we're highly taxed. And that's really adding to the problem. And I would ask that it be reviewed formally as to what strategies are being taken and those organisations brought together about what is the need and consulted with them formally and involving ratepayers in that formal consultation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further? Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor. Brian Doran from Longley. I'm also a ratepayer. I'd just like to ask, has a development application been lodged for the Jack Jumpers building?
Yes, it has.
HPC.
Yes.
When?
Last week.
Tuesday?
Last week.
Thanks. I presume it's going to be a big centre, performance centre.
So it will be, to my understanding of the preliminary plans that I've seen, is that it is two basketball courts on one level and then offices and gym and their associated other infrastructure on another. And, of course, there would be appropriate car parking as well.
Thanks. I think in today's paper a figure of $15 million was mentioned.
Correct.
Where does that breakdown of the funds come from?
So the council is not funding this project. The $15 million comes entirely from the state government because it was their commitment to the Jack Jumpers when the team was established 3 years ago.
Thanks. And I presume the new centre will require extra staff for cleaning and maintenance?
So that'll be a matter for the Jack Jumpers.
So who's going to pay for that?
The Jack Jumpers. So we're not paying for any of the operations of the... It is entirely their facility. We're not paying for any of it in terms of the running costs or the cleaning costs or anything like that.
Okay. And thanks. And will they contribute funds back to council?
CEO.
Thank you, Mayor. The transaction is that we are transferring the land through to the state government, so the state government will own the facility, and there will be a relationship directly between the Jack Jumpers and the state government. However, we will be rating that land, so that the transaction between council and the users, being the Jack Jumpers, will be through the relationship that we have with the state government, which is around the rating of that land.
So does that mean rates will be charged?
CEO.
Yes, it's our expectation that as part of the relationship, we will be charging rates on the footprint of that okay. land that is then owned by the state government.
Okay. And how would that figure of rates be determined?
Based on the value of the building.
By council or state government?
The valuer general.
State government?
Yep.
Okay. That's it. Thanks.
Would you like to ask some questions?
Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield. Thank you, Mayor, and everyone present for continuing to take questions. My first question may be seen as somewhat related to a agenda item. May I put the question for you to
you
decide,
can,
Mayor?
Yep, sure.
Does Kimber Council have a psychosocial policy including management strategies to reduce psychological risks?
We're all looking at each other. Yep. And Ms. Shakuti is the lucky winner. Apparently.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. Yes, we do. And we have undertaken some work in assessing what those risks are and how we will be managing those moving forward.
Will those strategies that you mentioned be included in one of the published policy documents on the Canberra Council website.
Ms. Shakuti.
I do not believe that that is required practice, but I will take that on notice.
Second question. Mayor, would you like to comment on the repainting of the southern outlet and wetlands tunnels, including who did it and why?
So it was done by council staff in order to remove the graffiti that had built up over a long period of time on those, and which had unfortunately covered all the artwork that was originally placed there. Used to be a school of thought that if you put lovely artwork that were done by students up on walls and other public places, that it would prevent graffiti because it would be respected. And unfortunately, as we know now, that hasn't been the case. Those underpasses are quite heavily used, particularly by park run and by a lot of families, and there was some pretty unsavoury things written there, and so they've been painted over, and we hope that they remain like that.
Are there any future plans for I'm struggling for the word, but
an anti-graffiti policy, maybe?
Any future plans for, again, organising some artwork for these tunnels in the future?
I'm not sure about for the tunnels, but Ms. Shakuti looks like she's very keenly got an answer rather than being forced to answer. Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Yes, we do have some initial plans. It won't be in the tunnels because it's very hard to do surveillance in the tunnels, but we will be looking at an area that is of high visibility and targeted for graffiti, and we're hoping that it will be a project with local youth and a local artist, and it will be planned for some time later this year when the weather warms up and it's more suitable to be painting walls.
Amazing. Awesome to hear. Final question. I once had a great interaction with an experience with my daughter on the Whitewater Creek track, quietly watching a platypus for a good 10 minutes, a couple metres away. And I'm sure there are other people in community that are interested in the platypus in Whitewater Creek. What conclusions did the recently completed study on the platypus in the Whitewater Creek, what conclusions were found, and will there be a report released based on this study?
Yep. I haven't seen the results of the study, but we've got Ms. Quinn here with us this evening. But can I just say that I don't know if it's the same platypus, but we have, we might have several, because Mr. Smee was out running recently and a platypus ran in front of him on the path, and he managed to jump over it as he was running. Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we have had many sightings of platypus in Whitewater Creek and also in some of in the Kingston wetlands as well recently. So I'm not sure if that's because there's an increase in platypus, which would be fantastic, or whether it's just that people are now looking and reporting more, which could be the case as well because the community is talking about platypus. So that's fantastic. In terms of the report assessment that was done at the underpass site on Summerlees Road, so an assessment was done for around 50 metres downstream of the road, and looking for animal burrows and digging and signs that platypus were using that space. And the report concluded so it was just about that project site rather than platypus generally in Whitewater Creek. And it concluded that there were no signs of platypus using the burrowing or clambering up onto the banks are quite vegetated, and there were no signs that platypus were using the banks. So it's not to say they aren't in that section of Whitewater Creek, because I think it would be fair to say they are. But what it was looking for is that where the Gabion section was going to be built, would that impact on platypus habitat? And no platypus burrows or anything were found in the bank.
Excellent. I'm excited the right person was here to answer.
You picked your night well.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, we'll continue through the agenda. We're now at questions on notice from the public. We had one from Mr. Grace in relation to the bus stop interchange with a response from Mr. Smee. One in relation to councillor duties from Professor Michael Rowan with an officer's response from Mr. Smee. And a further one from Professor Rowan with a response from Mr. Stewart in relation to Tasmanian Fire Service. If members of the public do wish to submit a question on notice, they can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. That takes us to page 4 and questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question? Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I had the privilege last week to visit the new Saltbush Centre, the Child and Family Learning Centre in Hutchins Street. And my question is, will Council be promoting this absolutely amazing centre, which is free to children and their parents to come and play and have access to support services, both babies and children of all ages? They even provide breakfast and lunch free. It's just amazing. And I understand that it's number 11 out of 10 that are already in Tasmania. Councillor Midgley organised a visit and it was really exceptional. And I'm wondering also whether council could organise a visit for all councillors and staff, because I think it is one of the best things that's arrived in Kingborough for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, unfortunately I was booked in to go to that and I was unwell. And I am making arrangements to have a tour of that, and I was able to speak to Councillor Midgley today, and she echoed those comments about what a magnificent facility it was and particularly how beautiful it was. But certainly I think we'd be more than happy to publicise that, because we do have such a large following on our social media pages. So great to have some new microphones, as well as publishing that to get it out and about as widely as we can in the community. And so I look forward to visiting, and we'll make that date sort of a few weeks in advance so as many councillors can come along as possible. So thank you for raising it. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about the ongoing closure of Summerlees Road with the council work that's being done there. The road closures have hit a bit of a snag, and people in the completion of the work has hit a snag, I should say, and there is some concern from people in the community that council is at fault on this one, and it would be great to hear from council officers what the state of play is and also what an ETA for the road opening could be. That would be great.
Yep.
Clear the record with the people in the community.
Yep. Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Before I hand over to the CEO, just some preliminary comments. Firstly, I totally understand that the community is frustrated by road closures, and as previously indicated, I'm impacted by this. I live nearby. We have several other council staff who live in the area, and we are seeing, you know, detours and increases in traffic and so on. Whilst when we last discussed this issue 2 weeks ago, we were confident that the project was on track. Unfortunately, at that time, we weren't aware of some issues in relation to some infrastructure that isn't owned by council that needs to be relocated. And so that has created some delays. There are some complications with things having to be noted on title and a range of issues. But can I just say, because I did give that assurance a couple of weeks ago, that I am very sorry to the community that they are experiencing those delays. It's frustrating for everybody because we did feel like we were going to be on track, and hopefully when we do projects in the future, we can do better. We perhaps, yeah, look, we're always looking for learnings. I think we've had a learning from this one. And in future, hopefully, it can, projects can go more smoothly, and hopefully this one will finish off in a smoother way. But I'll hand over to the CEO if he'd like to add something.
Thank you, Mayor, through you. Look, we organisationally, we are keenly aware, as the Mayor pointed out, about the impacts that having a road closure can have on our community. We are aware of the number of people that are having to put extra minutes into their commute on a day-to-day basis to bypass some of these roads, so we're really aware of that. As the Mayor pointed out, we did have timeline contingency built into the delivery of the project, and when we previously stated that we believed that we were going to deliver the project on time, it was because we had factored in that contingency. It had been basically used up at that point, but it was on the assumption that we weren't going to have any further delays at that time. Unfortunately, we have, as the Mayor pointed out, had some further delays around non-council-owned infrastructure and the process that we've had around the relocation of that and things like the land title process. So we do sort of acknowledge and want to empathise with the community who are feeling the impact here. We acknowledge the fact that it's frustrating when people have a timeline and a horizon in mind, and that that timeline shifts. And so we acknowledge that, and we are doing everything we can to bring the project to its full completion within the standards that our community expects, within the timelines, the best possible timeline that we can. That includes working with the contractor to try and expedite the process of project delivery. The team can potentially answer further if there's more detailed questions, but we are working hard to try and resolve this challenge as rapidly as possible.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I do have a follow-up. I'm assuming Council is the project manager of this work?
CEO.
That's correct. So the project has been delivered through a contractor. However, Council is project managing the delivery of it.
And was the moving of assets that are not owned by Council foreseen, or was that unforeseen? And if so, as project managers, was that our fault, or was there some sort of something else that we couldn't foresee?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, some were foreseen and were built into the project timeline. There were some requirements that were unforeseen, and it's those unforeseen ones that have tripped us up in terms of the delays. There's been some recent changes in legislation that have added to the bureaucracy of this process and unfortunately added to the timelines.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. I just wanted to flag a question for closed session.
Sure.
I wasn't actually going to ask any further questions, but given the debate, I thought I would try and clarify a few things. In relation to the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre, you said there's going to be no cost to us in terms of, I say council ratepayers, in terms of build or maintenance costs. Does that mean we'll be up for depreciation costs?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. No, we will not be depreciating the asset. Part of the transfer of the land title to the state government means that they will own the land and the built asset on top of it, so we will have no obligation to depreciate that asset.
Councillor Dean.
Great, thanks. You've also outlined that there'll be two indoor courts being built as part of the facility. Will they be available to be used to the community?
Yes, so yesterday when we did the media announcement, excuse me, along with the state government, Minister Street highlighted that the intention was that when the Jack Jumpers weren't using those courts, that they would be made available for the community. And the fine detail of that hasn't been worked out as yet. As we get closer to it being built and then opened, then we'll have a clearer picture of what that would look like. But that has always been one of the added bonuses of not only freeing up our court space at the sports centre, but also having community access to those courts as well.
Great. So can I assume that the court use would be for things like basketball, pickleball, netball, those kind of...
Yeah, so they would be like multi-use courts that could accommodate those, I believe.
Through you, Mayor. The courts won't be multi-marked. They will be marked just for basketball. However, I guess there's two components to that. So the use of the courts within the Jack Jumpers facility can be used for things like specific basketball training academies, those types of utilisation for the general public and the people within Kingborough. Additionally, the benefit of being able to refree up the space that the Jack Jumpers are training in within the Kingborough Sports Centre will allow sports like pickleball to be able to have more capacity within that facility. So there's an overall increase in the amount of capacity that we have within our network that will happen in a number of ways.
Councillor Dean.
So is it fair to say that the what you're saying about alleviating capacity on demand of the sports that's being used at the centre would align with Council's own sport and recreation strategy and what it seems in terms of demand for court use is currently in the municipality?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, absolutely. So, you know, we know that there's been significant growth in basketball in particular. You could maybe put some of that down to the Jack Jumpers effect, but there's also significant growth in the use of indoor courts as a whole, and so being able to make sure that we have full use of the Kingborough Sports Centre for our community is a great thing. In addition, we then have this additional capacity within the Jack Jumpers facility that will be used for some specific purposes, to make sure that our community are getting the use of that. So absolutely, it supports the delivery of our sport and recreation planning.
Councillor Dean, and before I go back to you, I've been asked by our media advisor if everyone could speak louder and closer to the microphones because I understand there are some sound issues. Apparently I'm doing all right, but the rest of you need to be a bit louder, please. Councillor Dean, that particularly applies to you, I'm told.
Yeah, moving on from the Jack Jumpers then, to another high-performance centre. You've been on the record recently, Mayor, talking about where that is currently at. So maybe would you be able to clarify what's happening in terms of that space, in terms of AFL specifically?
Yep, so there isn't much more to say, excuse me, from my previous update, and that is that we have been going through a process of speaking with the existing tenants of the Twin Ovals, so the Kingborough Knights Cricket Club and the Kingborough Tigers Football Club. We were asked by the Department of State Growth to start that process as the two major stakeholders that currently use the facilities at the Twin Ovals, and that is so that they could run a parallel process whilst things are still going on ahead at the Rosny site and with all the different things that the Clarence City Council will have to work through. So it's my understanding that we are, the fallback position should it not be able to proceed at Rosny for any reason, whether that be geotechnical, whether it be not getting through the council on a number of votes that we'll have to go through for rezoning and for development applications and the like. So I think we all feel quite strongly that we would be ready, willing and able to assist, given the facilities that we already have up at the Twin Ovals that are of very high standard. It certainly would be an easier transition through construction to have it there. So we watch this space and see what occurs.
Great. So it sounds like, just to be clear, we are talking to those going to be affected by a potential AFL High Performance Centre and seeking their consent before going ahead potentially.
Yep, so we held a very productive meeting last Monday with a representative of the Tasmanian Devils football. It's like being censored, isn't it? Like it goes off and it's like, is there a magic word that is triggering it going off? I don't know. We had a really productive meeting last week with three or four representatives from each of the cricket club, from the football club and also from the Tasmanian Devils. And we were able to provide them with plans of what it would look like up at the twin ovals with two additional ovals, and who would occupy which ovals, how it would work in terms of timeframes and so on. It was a very positive meeting, and there were some questions that came out of that, and the football club will be providing those answers. One of the things that we've said very clearly all along is that we don't want our existing local clubs to be in any way disadvantaged by the AFL High Performance Centre coming to Kingborough, if that was the final decision. And so we're working through those things, guarantees about, you know, dates as to when, you know, cricket would play, dates of when football would play, and they're the sorts of things that the actual Tasmanian Devils Football Club need to be able to answer, because they are aware of what their training requirements would be, and so it's a bit of a Jenga puzzle that we would need to put together. But it was certainly a very positive meeting for everyone, and a lot of excitement from those clubs about the possibilities of their sports being located, you know, right near a high performance centre, or potentially two high performance centres. And here is the CEO.
Mia, through you, I can just add one additional point to that response. Today an email has gone out to user groups of the Kingborough Sports Precinct to start the engagement more broadly with users that may be impacted or have an interest in the development of an AFL High Performance Centre up at the Kingborough Sports Centre broader precinct. So an email's gone out today providing them with some initial information and opening the course of dialogue between council and them around that. So as the Mayor pointed out, there was an initial phase of engagement with the groups that would be directly impacted, being the Knights and the Tigers, and this now casts that net to a wider subset of the users up there around that engagement.
Councillor Dean.
Great. And just one final question on what was kind of aired earlier in the evening, just in terms of what Council's been doing to, I suppose, support those in need in the community, particularly around housing. You referred to Council's commitment on housing. So we're one of the few councils in Australia that has such a commitment to social and affordable housing. I wonder whether there might be some benefit, or maybe whether it's not, some plans to have that circulated on our website so that those people, such as those present tonight, may be able to inform themselves of what Council does as a facilitator for social and affordable housing.
Thank you. It is already on our website. Yep. Thank you. Any further questions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just rolling back to the Summerlees Road Underpass project, will Council be providing regular updates on the progress of that project and yes, revised timeframes on our social media channels, etc.?
Yes. Yes, we are making a very firm commitment to ensure that we enhance the way that we communicate about our major projects such as that, so that the community can look at our own social media pages and get updates. So that will be that's a very firm commitment that we're making for regular updates.
Okay.
Any further questions? If not, we'll keep going. We're on page 5. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were none. And petitions still being actioned, there are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions having been received. Takes us to page 5, officers' reports to council. Endorsement of council's support for the control of feral deer in Kingborough with a recommendation on page 10. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to be able to move this and note the key recommendation that we endorse and support the position that feral deer should be managed with the objective of eradication in Kingborough. And I have a couple of questions, but I'll briefly take us through why that's so important from my perspective and from my understanding in terms of the environmental and potential negative impacts that these feral deer can have on our agriculture businesses and also on vehicular collisions as well in Kingborough. So for a lot of Australia, we are too late when it comes to feral deer management, but in Kingborough we have the opportunity to act. Feral deer populations are currently estimated at 83,000, which we can read about in the report. But if we note that we're currently heading towards the 100,000 deer mark and that population is increasing at about 11.5% per annum, if we do nothing, some experts think that this number will increase up to 50% annually. Now, I've heard estimates that this could mean, what we've seen on the mainland is that over the course of 20 years there was a tenfold increase in the population of feral deer. We are therefore looking at a reasonable possibility that within some decades in Tasmania we could have a million deer. Now, what does that mean for people driving their cars? What does that mean for our farm businesses? What does that mean for Bruny Island and tourism? What does that mean for the major impact that that will have on the environment, particularly around the variety and abundance of plant species that are affected by it? To me, I think it's also worth being cognizant of the major impact that feral deer have on recovery from bushfire. So when there are bushfires that take place in our municipality, which happens sadly all too frequently, when you have feral deer in that area, they make it very much more difficult to regenerate and recuperate those losses. So in 2016, we saw a 19-fold increase in deer activity in post-burn areas, according to NRE. If we don't reduce those numbers, then we'll never see regeneration post-fire. I think it's also important to note the severe impacts on our water. When you've got areas with streams and wetlands and you've got hard-hoofed animals in the landscape, deer that are wallowing and having dust baths and churning up areas, eroding the edges of streams, they'll prevent stream bank revegetation and increase turbidity and nutrient load. We'll also see the degradation of landscapes and makes it so much more difficult to have a regeneration of degraded agricultural landscapes. Now, I've got a personal anecdote that I tell around this table all too often about nearly hitting a deer. And if you've hit a wallaby before, you can imagine that if you hit a deer, it can be game over very quickly. And we now know from Department of State Growth that there have been, I believe, 68 reported cases in Tasmania of vehicles hitting deer. But in that instance where I nearly hit a deer, my car started skidding, the deer moved away. I didn't collide with the deer, but I easily could have gone off the road and that would have been the end. And so how many collisions are happening like that where nobody ever sees the deer, but we just know that, you know, a car goes off the road? And what does that mean when we've currently got a couple of hundred deer in Kingborough, so they are eradicable, but what if we suddenly have a million deer across the state of Tasmania? What does that mean for road collisions? We already know that Kingborough, according to AAMI Insurance, in Kingborough we hit more animals on the roads than any other municipality in Australia. Deer are much more serious to hit than a pademelon, a betong or a wallaby. And then finally, I just wanted to make the point about deer being a vector for disease. So deer, because they are moving around the landscape and they're difficult to manage, what it means if, heaven forbid, we get a case of foot and mouth in Tasmania, all of a sudden our farmers will have to go into biosecurity management plans where it will be horrendous and they'll have to be culling their own livestock and herds. But what does that mean when you have mobile roaming feral deer populations that are acting as a reservoir for disease? So even if our farmers have to cull their herds and cull their flocks, you still have mobile bands of feral deer that are carrying and reinfecting our agricultural areas. So the potential impact on agricultural businesses, and I'm thinking here particularly about all of Kingborough really, but Bruny Island as well, it can be catastrophic for agricultural businesses to have unmanaged feral deer populations. So I'll end there on my rant about why this is so important and why I'm so pleased to be moving this, but I want to focus our keen attention on the idea of eradication of feral deer while it's still possible. And in Kingborough, it is still possible. Elsewhere, it's not. So we need to strike while the iron's hot. So my first question through you, Mayor, is about eradication programs for deer populations in Zone 3. And I was hoping for, if possible, staff to take us through what that might mean, what it means for Bruny Island, and how it might take place.
Ms. Reichardt.
Through you, Mayor. At this stage, we're very early in the process of ascertaining exactly where the deer are and the population numbers. So to actually form a plan, an eradication plan that hasn't begun yet, what has started is talking with the state rangers on Bruny Island. So that's where the focus is at the moment, given that was... you won't see that in the management plan, but it has been prioritised as an area for them to focus because it being in the top in the 20 hotspots, biodiversity hotspots. They've currently started on ground already doing surveys, talking with the community, getting a feel for things, and they've had a very positive response so far. Once we've got an idea of those numbers and we start engaging the community, that's when the plan will actually develop.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. In terms of deer farming and in terms of if there were ever a situation where deer within Kingborough are released either through the negligence of somebody who has deer in their possession or otherwise, what role does council play in enforcing or charging or following up on people being negligent with respect to allowing feral deer incursions into Kingborough?
Ms. Reichardt.
Through you, Mayor, I believe that would be a matter for the state, given that they're the regulatory body for deer farms.
Sure, thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Finally, I want to make the point that eradication programs for satellite populations should really start as soon as possible. When you have contiguous populations, obviously feral deer will come and go in and out of the boundaries. They're not looking at the maps. They're not looking at the zones. But we have the opportunity, particularly on Bruny Island, where we have this kind of closed system. We actually have the opportunity, I believe, to eradicate feral deer, and that's a great place to start. I think we should be looking at... Maybe that's a question, is how quickly does council believe we could eradicate deer off Bruny Island?
Ms. Reichardt.
Through you, Mayor. I wouldn't be able to foresee that at the moment, being able to provide an answer, because that's going to rely on getting that community participation. There's very little council land on Bruny Island. What we're relying on is getting the community on board. And once we start that process, I think, like I said, with the management plan, we'd be able to predict a little bit better.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. I think it was really important to hear that Bruny Island plays a special role because, not least because it has been identified by Minister Plibersek as one of our 20 biodiversity priority areas in the 30% of land and water to be protected by 2030 initiative. Bruny Island plays a special role because of its unique environmental and cultural value, and therefore I think it's a really important place for us to focus when it comes to protecting those values. My question is, I guess, is it too early to start talking about the resourcing requirements that are needed when it comes to making sure that you can have the best laid plans in the world, but unless they're resourced adequately, because time is of the essence, I really want to make sure that councillors have a very clear sense about what is going to be required of us to make sure that our best laid plans are actually enacted. So can we have a kind of quantum about what kind of funding and staff resources we think are necessary in order to achieve successful outcomes here?
Ms. Reichardt.
Through you, Mayor. You're correct in being able to predict those resources required at the moment. It is really hard, again, without the population numbers. At this stage, we're looking at very little staff time to be able to work with NRE, with the Game Services Tasmania. What they're looking for at the moment is for council to show the same position, I guess, as them and facilitate that community consultation. As far as on-ground management, it's going to be up to the landowners to implement. At the moment, we've got the support of the state government to go in and actually do on-ground management. Once that funding ends, I'm not sure at this stage what would be required. It wouldn't be, unless the deer are on our land, we certainly wouldn't be facilitating on-ground management.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I'll conclude my remarks by asking everybody to think about... we've all had run-ins with wildlife on the roads. The feral deer population is really increasing very, very rapidly. The risks regarding... may I please just conclude my remarks? 30 seconds.
So do I have a motion? Yep, Councillor Street, seconded Councillor Dean, or is that Councillor Cordova be granted another minute to finish his contribution? All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. The questions are, what will it cost our farmers? What will it cost our tourism sector? What will it cost our families if feral deer populations continue to rise as rapidly as they have been doing? It's essential that we get involved, and I applaud the Council for getting involved. So thank you to staff for this initiative.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions? No? Okay, I will put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 28, submission to the consultation on the Local Government Code of Conduct, draft regulations and order, with a recommendation on page 30. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Do I have a mover? Moved Councillor Cordova. Thank you. Seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. We're seeking to provide a submission. This motion asks that Council will provide a submission to the Office of Local Government on the draft local government regulations and a new ministerial code of conduct supporting the updates in accordance with comments outlined in the report. I think the main changes are basically making it so that everybody...
Pop it back on.
Yes, so the primary change is that the code will automatically apply to all councillors rather than councils having to adopt a model code. And the other significant change is the inclusion in the code that a councillor is not able to engage in prohibited conduct in their relationships with the community, and that's things like discrimination, sexual harassment, victimisation and inciting hatred. I think it's non-controversial and I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor... Anybody else? Fox, thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question. On page 29, it states that the dispute resolution would be undertaken internally, but limited to minor and vexatious complaints. I'm wondering, how does one define minor and vexatious, and who would be responsible?
So that would be the CEO who would be responsible. Did you want to add something? Thank you.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So the intent of the dispute resolution process is a step before a complaint gets to the code of conduct process. So when it says in paragraph 4.7 that it limiting minor and vexatious complaints from entering the code of conduct process. So what it's saying is early stages, they'll be filtered out so that they don't get to the code of conduct process rather than all complaints getting to that point. So it's not saying that it limits the fact that they might exist in the first place, but it will provide a filter before it gets to a full code of conduct.
Councillor Fox.
Well, I personally think it's a great idea. It's a real improvement to the current process and how it's been working. But I am slightly concerned that maybe there needs to be an independent person as well as the CEO to make that decision. But at the end of the day, I guess if the Code of Conduct panel feels it's vexatious or minor, then after the CEO thinks it isn't, I'm just concerned about that, yeah.
Mr. Stewart.
So through you, Mayor. So the process is not that the CEO is the arbiter of that process. There's a significant process that goes in behind it. The Local Government Association of Tasmania are developing a draft policy that would help us deliver upon the disputes resolution process. So that will come to you for adoption before this comes into place. But it involves a number of steps in the process. It involves people that have knowledge of legislation being as part of the evaluation of the process. So it's not a sole determination for the CEO as to whether or not it goes through the disputes resolution process and through to the code of conduct.
Further discussion? No. Councillor Cordova, no summing up. I'll put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against?
Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to item 15.3, Annual Plan 2024-25. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Antoli. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to present Council with the annual plan. I understand that a lot of effort has gone into making this a really simple document to read with clear and achievable actions. It is a more document than has previously been drafted, so thank you to all the staff who have been involved in putting this together. It is nice and easy to understand, nice clear headings, and I look forward to the year ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gladwright. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My brief contribution is that I did notice there were some typos, and I have passed that on to the CEO already for those that might have read it and seen typos as well. My comment is about particularly the tree bylaw that is mentioned as a priority area in 3. I note for the community that the tree bylaw continues to cause significant concern in our community due to its believed draconian application, which has become a major obstacle in development applications of all types across our community. It is one of the two major causes of complaints that I receive as a councillor from the community. And I believe also my other colleagues as well. And we need to reduce how difficult it is to do business in Kingborough. I've received feedback from both within and outside council staff regarding their concerns about how the bylaw will be integrated into these specific area plans that are going to be put forward to fit under the Tasmanian planning scheme, the new one. But I look forward to investigating all of that at our upcoming workshop in early September, and I will be scrutinising it in the upcoming weeks, because I won't be supporting anything that crushes the hopes and dreams of our homeowners and ratepayers in Kingborough. And I do believe that the application of the tree bylaw needs serious review, and I just wanted to assure the community listening that that's something that I and several of my colleagues will be doing. But it's great, and I do agree with what the Deputy Mayor said. It's easy to read. It's good to see it's succinct, and people want to know what is happening with council, what are we doing over the next 12 months. And something that's simple and easy, that's written in plain English, is fantastic, and I commend the CEO in providing a document like that to the community, and I know that it's part of his customer service review plan to look at making sure that we write things in plain English, because not everyone is a lawyer, a planner, an expert in local government affairs. And the easier that we communicate in a manner that is intelligent and not overly simplified, the better it is for our residents, and it reflects well on the CEO for promoting that. So thank you very much. And I do support it, and I will be voting to ratify it.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's terrific, and I thank the staff for their work on this. Some highlights for me are to complete and implement the Margate Master Plan and review. So complete and implement the Margate Master Plan, that'll be terrific, and also review Council's integrated transport strategy. I think that's a really good opportunity. I was also pleased to see the Tree Strategy 2023 to 2033 getting a prime mention there at the top of Objective 3.1. My question is about providing, this is Objective 2.1 on page 6, which is page 63 of our agendas, provide a publicly accessible GIS that enables a good understanding of property-related opportunities and constraints. Please may I have a bit of further explanation about that GIS opportunity and when it might be available to the public and what it might share with the public.
The CEO.
Thank you for the question, and through you, Mayor. Unfortunately, our Chief Information Officer isn't here, who I'm sure would be able to answer this question much more articulately than I can. However, the purpose behind this is making sure that we're providing communities some of the data that we have available to us through Council. We have some very good GIS systems, and the more of that information that we can make accessible to our general public, then the more they can understand various things that are happening, the nature of their property and the area around them, so they can understand. And fundamentally, it makes council more accessible to deal with by providing greater levels of information through to our community.
Councillor Cord.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I think that's a terrific answer, and it brings me a lot of comfort that we have that idea of transparency at the forefront. I think a lot of the concern that I receive about people trying to navigate the planning system, there is a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt just in that process, and that's a natural thing to happen when you're dealing with a complex area where so many people are not professionals, and they haven't spent years and years studying this, and so it's only reasonable that people have a certain amount of fear and anxiety associated with it. So I think the more that we can be transparent and help people understand the lie of the land and give them access to the information that we have available, I think it'll make the whole process easier, because then it will help constituents come to the council with questions that are informed by the information that they've had available to them, rather than coming to the council with a complete blank slate, not having had access to that information. So I applaud the council for their work here, and I think the whole structure of the annual report is actually very clear and easy to understand, concise and succinct, and I will try to emulate its succinctness by passing the microphone back. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with everything that's been said. It's a great document, easy to follow, plain English, so congratulations to all the staff involved. Just one of the objectives that I'm really excited about is around service delivery. So it's the 2.4. The organisation has a corporate culture that delivers quality customer service, encourages innovation and has high standards of accountability, and there's three dot points under that. Can we get a little bit of an overview of what work's being done in that space? Because I think it's really great for the organisation.
CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So you'll note there's three sub-bullet points that we've added under that one. Obviously, the first one around the developing of a customer service strategy for the organisation. Beyond that, we want to do some work this year to understand our customer satisfaction, so understand how the residents of Kingborough feel about the organisation, you know, what their thoughts are about our service delivery, and identify where our strengths are, but also where the opportunities are for us as an organisation to be better than meeting the needs of our community. Through having that data, we'll be able to do more to be able to target, I guess, our approaches towards how we engage with our community. You'll also note that the third bullet point there is around cultural change program, implementation of organisational operational accountability. So that's really looking internally into the organisation about how we empower and support our staff to be making good decisions, decrease escalation across the organisation, provide empowerment for staff in their role to be able to make good decisions, but alongside that also comes the accountability that comes with the responsibility of making decisions. So there's some work that we need to do internally that will then have a positive impact out into our communities with how this organisation responds.
Excellent. Thank you.
Councillor Bain, anything further? No. Councillor Dean.
Just a quick comment. Again, just like what others have said in terms of its succinctness, I really appreciate. My question is just actually around our strategic plan. That is due to expire next year. Well, expire is probably the wrong word. But when that was drafted, that was 5 years ago. We have a new CEO since then, several new councillors, including myself, and it was just a different time, pre-COVID. So I'm just wondering if a CEO might be able to outline what plans are afoot for developing a new strategic plan.
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Absolutely, it's a great opportunity when strategic plan time comes around to re-evaluate where we are as an organisation and really think about what's going to be important into the future. So, yeah, we're thinking about what that process will look like at the moment. I'm putting together a bit of a mud map about how that process will sort of flow through in order to make sure that it fits in with our various planning timelines and that we're going to be achieving the outcomes that we need by the end of the financial year. There's some things that I'll be talking to the council about through workshops coming up about... Sorry. Yes, new microphone system will be on that agenda. But about what the long-term vision for Kingborough is, what the Kingborough that we might want to envisage is for sort of 20, 30, 50 years into the future, and through that visionary process be able to understand what our five-year strategic planning process might look like as well. So further work to come. Hopefully that's an exciting process for all the councillors as we get into that, and hopefully we can really reflect the wants and needs of our community through that process as well.
Any further comments? Councillor Gladright, I assume you don't want to sum up? No? I'll put the recommendation then. Moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 69 with a recommendation on page 71, Kingborough Health and Wellbeing Strategy for 2024 to 2029. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Street. Seconded, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Gives me great pleasure to move the motion for adoption of the Kingborough Health and Wellbeing Strategy for 2024 to 2029. Sorry, yeah, I'm not used to the fact that these are on the blink. A lot of people aren't familiar with the fact that the Local Government Act actually creates as one of local government's primary reasons for being the health and welfare of the local community, words to that effect, as being one of the primary roles of local government in Tasmania. And as such, the Kingborough Health and Wellbeing Strategy is one of the primary documents that we should have reference to in terms of the work that we do in the community. Just to pick out some highlights, it is an extensive document, but particularly pleased to see ongoing support for things like Council's Tracks and Trails program, as well as all of the synergies with Council's recently developed sport and recreation strategy, as well as creating ways for Council to support health and wellbeing within the community in a less organised fashion as well. It is an extensive document in terms of our strategy, and it's been very well put together by our staff, and I certainly encourage our residents and ratepayers to read it and to make sure that that they hold us to account in terms of carrying it out. And I commend the motion to Council.
Thank you very much, Councillor Street. Councillor Antoli. That was an accident, okay. Any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just going to point out the key strategic priorities. I think nail it very well. The fact encourage and support a healthy, active and involved community, provide healthy spaces and places, and create a safe and inclusive community that supports a sense of belonging. So I think I encourage people to go and read it, because all the actions under there, there's some great actions, including, you know, advocate for improved health and medical services to be based in Kingborough, create partnerships to ensure that isolated and disadvantaged members of the community have access to services, and establish safe linkages for passive recreation and active transport. So there's lots of great things in there, and another great document by staff. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further discussions? No. Councillor Dean.
Yes, I had a question, but I couldn't quite locate what I was after, so maybe someone else might be helping me in a minute. But look, I just wanted to highlight, obviously lots of great things that Councillor Street and Baines pointed out already, but the two things around youth engagement I particularly am really looking forward to. And the other thing I should say in the implementation or action plan is that there is a lot that start with continue. So I think it'd be great for, you know, members of the community to read, obviously, what this strategy is about, but I think a lot will just experience the results of what Council's already doing, and hopefully new initiatives as well. My question, and I can't find it, sorry, at the moment on my computer, but it was just around advocating for additional police presence with the 24/7 police station. I'm just wondering what, I guess, that has come out of on the back of, I guess, the briefings that we've had as councillors, and I understand the angst that comes around kind of each election cycle at local government, this want or desire for increased police presence. But my question there is really what's triggered, apart from the community angst, what's triggered, or what's the evidence behind us officially advocating for a 24/7 police station in Kingston?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. It came from the consultation and engagement for this report, and a theme was our community members not feeling safe particularly out of daylight hours. And so that was an action that was developed in response to that. It's also around that community members not certain, well, quite a number of community members not feeling safe when there is an incident, and then response times to that as well.
Councillor Dean.
But I don't want to get caught in the weeds here, because the report is fantastic and I absolutely recognise that feeling amongst the community, particularly in recent years. Would this then, does this mean then, I suppose, we will be advocating come election cycles to state government for 8247 police station specifically, or can we keep it broader that we will obviously appreciate a greater police presence and greater staffing, is what I understand is actually called for, not a 24/7 police station, but additional staffing. Because I'm only asking this because I just don't want it to be officially there, I suppose, that then this is a unified council position that we want a 24/7 police station rather than going for what police in Kingston specifically want themselves. So we're not kind of, I suppose, misleading or whatever the community.
Sure. Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, I think you've raised a good point, and we can certainly look at potentially, or if the wording, you would like the wording changed to appropriate police presence in the municipality.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, it's partly my fault. I should have probably flagged it when I went out to draft feedback. It doesn't mean I may just spotted it this time around, but I appreciate that my comments have been heard.
I think the longer term plan is that, you know, eventually if the population grows sufficiently that, you know, the end game would be 24-hour police station, but I think we're a long way off that and there needs to be incremental increases along the way to build up to that. And that's certainly only a couple of months ago I wrote to the Minister for Police advocating that we have additional police officers stationed here at Kingborough, and I know that that the Deputy Mayor has done that also following discussion at the Safety Committee also, because there's certainly, with all of the issues around staff being off on leave, whether it be annual leave or sick leave, extended sick leave in particular, those people are not replaced in the model that operates at the moment around the state for police stations, and that creates a huge amount of stress on the remaining staff there. And so there has certainly been a very strong message from the local police inspector that they want to see an increase in the number of staff that are allocated to them so that they can ensure complete coverage of their shifts and also alleviating the staff pressures that they have. I think it was Councillor Antoli next and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is around nomenclature mentioned in the report around climate change advisor. In the past, we've wanted to promote climate adaptation, and I've noticed there's been a bit of shifting in the wording, and if someone could give me a comment on that, noting that we can't change or alter the climate, but we can certainly be advised on how to adapt to the changes. Could someone comment about the shift in nomenclature?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, that was probably an inadvertent use of term, and at Council, our focus is on climate adaptation.
Yeah, thank you.
As well as alongside initiatives for reducing emissions, etc.
Thank you, and I do think one of the key, apart from, echo what Councillor Dean said about the youth strategy, 100% behind that. That's an area I've worked in for 10 years here in Tasmania, but also making our community more resilient. How do we cope? How are we better able to deal with climactic events, in particular fire being the number one, by a long shot, and so that's excellent. That was my only question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly, just to support what Councillor Dean was saying, to the extent that I think it's important that we don't get bogged down on specific treatments that are not necessarily evidence-based. So it's not buildings that make people safer, it's healthy It's not buildings that make people safer, it's healthy communities that make people safer, and there's a wealth of evidence to show that other interventions around the perception of safety, things like having good passive surveillance, good street lighting, all kinds of, you know, diversionary programs, engagement programs, drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs, there's myriad things beyond just keeping a building open a certain number of hours or closing it a certain number of hours, and I just really want to emphasise that talking about appropriate police presence in order to enshrine that perception of safety so people genuinely feel safe is a much more valid target than arbitrarily choosing a certain number of hours to have a building open. And certainly research is showing that interventions around... there are other interventions around reducing crime and improving public safety that are, in fact, more cost-effective, more equitable than simply punitive responses or saying, oh, we're going to turn on all the CCTV cameras and open up all the police stations. That actually won't reduce crime to the extent that I think we often think that there's a panacea, a silver bullet, where if we just have more police, then we'll have less crime. But obviously there's neighbourhoods in Tasmania that I could mention that have far more police than we have, and yet they also have far higher rates of crime. That's just a fact. Those are just statistics. So we need to have a broad and, I guess, health in all policies approach and a more open mind towards making people feel safe in the community and tackling the scourge of crime rather than knee-jerk or simplistic responses. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further discussions? Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'd basically written notes to the effect of what Councillor Cordova has just said. I think it's really important for us to have a strategy for activating spaces so that we have people of all ages in areas where there are currently perhaps misbehaviour by young people, but to try and have better lighting, music even, and to have functions and food and dancing and activated spaces are much less likely to incur vandalism or graffiti, and people are less likely to damage toilets if they're open and they're constantly being used. So I think a lot of the spaces that we manage and control, we could do that, and then we could benefit as a community and make a better and more connected community, which is really so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Dean.
Could I just clarify? I said I didn't want to get bogged down the weeds, but I am. I 3.3.2, I've found it, thanks to Councillor Bain. It does say, advocate to the Tasmanian Government to increase the police presence at Kingston Police Station to 24 hours. I personally would feel much more comfortable if those last three words were removed, just so it's not an official policy or unified position of this council, that yes, we absolutely hear the community and we want best practice to happen and we want an increased police presence so that we continue to be one of the safest municipalities. So my question here is whether I would need to move something here or whether we are comfortable, given this is now the final draft, I suppose, that would we need to...
I think we could probably, if everyone can give me an indication by nodding their heads or, you know, yes, that seems to have the support of everyone around the table, so Ms. Shakuti will make a note of that and remove those three words.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Street, do you want to sum up? No. Nope. I'll put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. I'm going to call a brief recess because we've still got a fair bit to get through. I was hoping to get through to close session before we have a recess, but I think we might be having quite a discussion about the next item, so we'll be back here at 7:30 for those who are watching along at home, just while we have a short comfort break, and we'll be back at 7:30. Thank you.
Sam. All right, welcome back. Thank you to those who are watching at home for their patience while we had a quick comfort break. And can the CEO confirm that the recording has restarted?
Yes,
It has. Thank you very much. We are now at page 110, Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee minutes from their meeting on the 21st of June 2024 with a recommendation on page 111. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Antoli and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. The next item is quite interesting. We're here to discuss a motion that was being put to Council for a decision from the Kingborough Bicycle Advisory Committee, KBAC. They met on the 21st of June this year, and they would like Council to replace the permanent signage that we have at Kingborough Community Hub, which bans ball playing, roller skating, skateboarding, scooters and bicycle riding. And they want it replaced with a temporary sign but also to allow people who are hiring the rooms to have freedom from use of the area from those scooters, etc., mentioned. The committee argued that the current permanent ban limits the use of the hub's outdoor areas by families and young children who they believe benefit from safe, flat spaces for recreational activities. However, council officers do not support this proposal due to concerns around managing social, antisocial behaviour that has been an issue in the past. So we're here to discuss the need to prioritise the hub's usage for meetings and events versus individuals' or community members' belief that they should be using the space and the areas for their children's activity. I note that we've had quite a few notes from mums and dads this week on the subject. I do think that a key positive is the committee's focus on creating more inclusive community spaces, particularly for families, but that's also managed by council officers' perspective that the space was never created for skateboarding and ball playing, etc., and there's plenty of opportunities and spaces in the community for that to happen. So I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. I would just like to move that we go to move into a discussion.
Do I have a seconder that we go into discussion? Seconded by Councillor Fox. So the motion is that we move into discussion. Moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Councillor Dean.
Thank you to my colleagues for supporting this. Look, I am aware that Councillor Antoli has kind of already put it out there, what the crux of why I've put this to discussion. We are being presented, I suppose, without causing offence to the mover of the original amendment, with a fairly blunt, I suppose, kind of amendment in which we would provide the ability for people to skate, to play soccer, to ride bikes at the hub each day, every day, and without any restrictions. I'm not opposed to that idea at all. The thing that I take heed here is obviously council staff and council officers' concerns with that, particularly around the antisocial behaviour that Councillor Antoli has referred to. However, I do see this as two not necessarily interlinked issues, one being antisocial behaviour that happens 9 to 5, that the staff clearly who work there at that time are struggling to deal with. The second part of this, I think, is what is outlined in multiple reports and strategies that we have about activating spaces. And I think we've all kind of pointed to at some point the fact that the hub is a space that could be activated more. I'd point to the report, the health and wellbeing strategy that we've just approved tonight. 2.41 of that recommendation is to review recreational spaces within the municipality with a view of allocating spaces for multi-use, including the provision of some smooth flat surfaces for roller skating and rollerblading. Now, while there might be places in the community to ride your bike or shoot a hoop, there are very few spaces that are smooth concrete for people in the roller skating and rollerblading community to do something that is also undercover. Having that happen during an event and a 9-to-5 workday while our staff are working, I completely appreciate is not appropriate. I would like to see consideration for a trial of such a lifting of the ban to maybe happen on weekends where there is greater surveillance of the area anyway, from things like parkrun and lots of people activating that space, so the capacity for younger people to, on their own, cause havoc at the hub during work hours when they should probably be at school is something that we might be able to avoid by having it as an out-of-hours lifting or temporary trial. So I'm not against the idea. I'm against the amendment that's been put up, but I'm not against the concept of having a trial per se. So I personally would like this to be deferred so that staff have an opportunity to come back to us with some options rather than just a 100% lifting of the ban, or whether there is some middle ground that might be able to support staff that work there as well as the rollerblading and roller skating community. So I'm more than happy for other people to have their say on this, but I will like at the end of this to move to defer.
Further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that I'm happy to support a motion to defer if that's where this ends up, but then again, I'm happy to deal with it right now. To my mind, I think, as a general, let's first separate the issue of antisocial behaviour from whether or not it's a good idea for people to rollerblade around a working building and a high pedestrian area. I think that there are alternative spaces available. I realise that this area is undercover, but also, as the report says, it was kind of never designed to be the area where you should learn how to ride a bike or rollerblade. So let's put that aside about alternative spaces available. I believe that there probably are in Kingborough alternative areas, whether they're at the area within Kingston Park that's actually designed for utilising the half-court area. It actually says on the Kingston Park website, the exact words are something along the lines of the youth area behind the Flying Fox, where the half-court basketball is, that utilises the old Kingston High School sports court as a place for skating, handball and half-court basketball and netball. Nevertheless, we can deal with that issue later. Now let's turn to this idea of antisocial behaviour. A sign on a wall, either banning or not banning something, has, I would suggest, very little bearing on whether or not antisocial behaviour is taking place. So I've certainly been in that hub doing a business activity when antisocial behaviour was taking place that specifically involved people on skateboards, and when they were asked, please desist from skateboarding because it's making a lot of noise, they then tipped over a green wheelie bin and made a lot of noise. So it's, you know, having a sign, they weren't stopping to read the sign, they weren't deterred by a ban or not a ban, and the threat of an infringement notice was hardly on the mind of those people participating in antisocial behaviour. So I think we need to be really clear that the sign is not, the ban is not going to affect antisocial behaviour one way or the other. If we want to deal with antisocial behaviour, which of course we all do, and we should have a methodical strategy and discussion around ways to address that antisocial behaviour, but we shouldn't get it tied up in whether or not a ban on skating and rollerblading in this area is appropriate or not. So let's separate those two issues. Happy to defer if that's where we're heading, but also happy to support the motion. Sorry, I should be clear on this. Happy to support the idea of a trial, even though I recognise that in this motion, the suggestion is to retain the permanent signage prohibiting ball playing. Now, why do I support that? Is we've had advocacy from the community that I've listened to around the reason why they basically are saying, why should we be punished for some antisocial behaviour? And I hear that case, I hear that argument. And if there is community interest, which clearly there is, in looking for alternatives to having that signage, then I'm willing to facilitate that conversation. So I'm in the hands of the other councillors. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I would love to hear, this is obviously a discussion, love to hear from council officers if there are options, and maybe they could share what has happened to the antisocial behaviour since the ban was implemented. And maybe they could also give us examples of the sort of antisocial behaviour you had before the ban, so we can have a contrast. I don't think that we need to defer. I think council officers can easily tell us if there are options right here and now, and we can make a decision.
I think it's always been a ban. I don't think it was a before or after. It was, the ban was put on when the... I'll stand to be corrected, but it's my understanding the ban was put on at the time when the hub was built. Ms. Shakuti, have you got anything to add, please?
Through you, Mayor. So I'm not sure when the signage was put there. We have had ongoing and high levels of antisocial behaviour at the hub. Weekdays in particular, but weekends as well. Some of that antisocial behaviour is not pleasant for staff who are working over there. And, you know, we are actively managing that at the moment through numerous ways. So we've been talking to police, looking at other deterrents, etc. Reports from staff is that that signage does assist, as they are able to point that that skating and rollerblading, etc., is not permitted in the area. Without it, then they don't have any ability to say that. The other issue we face is that it's very disruptive for hirers, whether it's antisocial or recreational. And look, I completely support that it would be amazing to have an area, or potentially that area, used for the right purposes, but unfortunately that's not what we're experiencing at the moment. The other issue we have as well is that hirers hire on the weekend as well, quite frequently, so at probably every second weekend there would be hirers, at least on the Saturday and potentially on the Sunday. I've been told of examples when hirers have gone out to ask people to be quiet and they don't, and that includes families there. So it's a really tricky one to manage. Our staff aren't there on a weekend, and hirers, it would be requiring hirers to put signage out and then manage that area during their event. So we can certainly put forward some options, but there's quite a lot of complexity and resourcing considerations that we would have to think about in those options.
Councillor, lost track of where we were.
Mine's just a procedure. I haven't had mine on for a while.
Can I follow up?
Sorry, Councillor Fox, yes, has had hers on for a while. Then I'll go to Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
I've kind of lost my train of thought. I guess I'm concerned that the area is underutilised a lot of the time. And by restricting the utilisation by young people, I feel it's not fair, basically. It's one of the few places where children of all ages and from all schools can congregate together and socialise. And I think if you've got pedestrian linkages all linking to this area, you've got buses stopping at this area and going, it's a really accessible, easily accessed place. It's also bike central. The cafe isn't doing well because they're not getting enough patronage. And if we ban children and young people from this area, then that's not going to help any future anchor tenant for that building. And I think it's really important that we manage this space rather than put signs up and say, well, it's too much noise for the hirers. The hirers, maybe we need more acoustical separation for the building. There's just screen doors that fold out. There's no acoustics in those walls. Maybe there are architectural ways of dealing with noise to reduce the impact on the people in the building. I know this could be expensive, but in the long run it might be an improvement that's been recognised and that we should do something about. I think the letters we've been receiving have really hit home with me. Originally I read the report and I thought, yeah, this is a no-brainer, but I don't think we should just be having a knee-jerk reaction on this issue. I'd really like to get a more in-depth look at the options and the possibilities and the concerns that have been raised by the people who've written into us. And like Councillor Dean, I would prefer to see this matter deferred so that we can take the heat out of the argument. It's been raised as an issue from the Bike Committee, and unfortunately Councillor Midgley is not here tonight to defend their position. Although I think Councillor Bain is the deputy of that group, and he was at that meeting, I understand. But I think it would be worth us having a better look and a better in-depth report on this issue before making a definitive decision tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My follow-up with Ms. Shakuti is a personal experience I had where, I suppose, reinforces what you're saying. There was a couple being married, and they were having wedding photos there. I think they were from a non-English speaking background, and some of the young men on skateboards wolf whistled the bride. I was present, and I think it's because I work in that youth homelessness space, I was able to say with some authority for them to show some respect and to move on, and they did. And I know that the couple or someone that related to the couple thanked me for intervening. So while that doesn't happen every day, if council staff are saying that it's an issue for them and it's decreased since they've reinforced it, I would like to put the safety and the work experience of council staff and those who hire the rooms over some young men and some young ladies who feel the need that that's their sacred space to go skateboarding when we live in a huge community with lots of opportunities for skateboarding. And I get it. When you're young, you want activities, but you can't own the entire community. You know, young people can't own the space to themselves. That we have to have spaces that are safe for them, which we do have, and spaces that are safe for our staff. My own daughters told me once of an occasion that they feel unsafe there as teenage women walking from the Goshawk Way bus stops to Channel Court through that area because of the gangs of young men who, again, ogle at them. They feel unsafe. So I think we can just... They can go elsewhere. They can have their fun time elsewhere. And I think we are allowed as council to allow our council property that we own for the benefit of the community to be used for other people in the community and not just for one little group who cause a disturbance. So I'm happy to support in this... I'm happy to support the council officer's position in the paper. I personally don't think we need an options paper. It's a yes or no decision because I don't see how you can particularly chop up the area and give it to skateboarders and some to staff. So I'm just happy to move on and just make a decision and bear it.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm convinced by Councillor Antoli that this is kind of a yes or no decision, so there's potentially no need to defer it to a workshop unless that's a motion that gets moved. I just wanted procedurally to mention that I would like to foreshadow an alternative motion. If this particular motion were to fail, then I would be offering a motion alternative which might remove Clause B and instead at Clause A would say notes the minute of the KBAC and the motion raised by the committee and action the KBAC's recommendation or something to that effect. So that's my alternative motion foreshadowed. I just wanted to raise a quick point about potentially being careful or moderating our language a little bit so as not to unnecessarily alarm the community talking about roving gangs of young. It's not that bad. There is an issue there that we need to talk about, but as I mentioned before, we should, I think, be separating the issue of antisocial behaviour, which can actually occur at any age range. So we should separate the issue of antisocial behaviour from whether or not that particular area undercover is an appropriate place for ball sports and people riding around on roller skates. I think there's a case to be mounted that it's not the best place for riding around or ball sports. We can mount that case, but let's really be careful not to conflate the issue of antisocial behaviour because, as I mentioned before, I've seen antisocial behaviour taking place, and when it does take place, I don't think a sign makes that much difference. I heard exactly what our council staff said about being able to point to it as an authoritative person and point to a sign, but I really don't think it is actually moderating antisocial behaviour or not. I think there are deeper underlying social causes that need to be addressed in order to effectively deal with antisocial behaviour. So if we could just separate those two issues, I think that would be more effective. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. Yeah, look, I can really appreciate there are some kind of competing priorities in this issue. Yes, there are the hirers of the hub, and I understand that often there are quite sensitive events that take place there, weddings, funerals, small gatherings, meditative type events, those types of things that do require. On the other hand, I am a mother of young kids who are at that skating age, and can I just say that concrete is so beautifully smooth and delightful to skate on, and there that does not exist anywhere else in the municipality. Even that basketball court that you're mentioning, the half court or whatever it's called, which is identified as a skating area, it's not the same type of concrete. So there are those two competing things. In my mind tonight, really, we're trying to just note the minutes of the KBAC. So I feel like it would be really important if we could separate that out and just deal with that tonight. And then I'm prepared to bring a motion, or another councillor might be prepared to bring a motion at another time where we can fully debate and discuss this. I see that there might be several different solutions available to us. We might be able to look at putting some of that beautifully smooth concrete onto the basketball court. We don't know how much that might cost, but that might mean that there is a skating area and it's not impacting on those events. It might be that we could find a time during the week, which is just a two-hour period, say a Friday after school, and that is a known advertised period where families can come with their young children, and it is acceptable at that time just for skating. I'm not talking about bikes and big things, but there would have to be some parameters around that. That's another possible solution that's available to us. I think that it's hard to try and come up with these solutions on the fly tonight, so I'm really interested in separating this out, dealing with the KBAC minutes, and then looking at this another time and getting some more information from staff in that process.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, and thank you to the Deputy Mayor, because I think she's quite clearly pointed out that this isn't a black and white or yes or no decision. There's a lot more to it. There are options which could be a Friday afternoon, could be weekend use, could be specifically to roller skating and not to the other uses that are named up. So there's lots of variables, lots of options. The issue we're hearing is that it's a staff safety issue which happens when they are there, which is clearly Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. But the antisocial behaviour is happening regardless, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, also on weekends. And also the other issue is about impacting hirers. I feel like there are options to be able to ameliorate those impacts. And just saying right now yes or no for me isn't quite good enough, to be honest. As you pointed out, Deputy Mayor, there is only one space with polished concrete that the roller skating community, I've taught students all the way down the channel, I know parents of theirs, I know adults in the community that travel from far as Middleton and Woodbridge into Glenorchy and into town to use Town Hall with our polished wooden floorboards. I know that there are other municipalities that host amazing roller skating functions that bring and draw crowds that would activate the space and have amazing, the most beautiful events you could possibly imagine in spaces which I foresee we have the potential here. This is, again, just the potential of a trial. If it turns out that the antisocial behaviour continues, as it most might do, then we have the capacity to end that trial and to move on. But I would be very disappointed if we weren't at least to give it a go and at least hear the options from staff as a report come back to us. So I will be continuing to, at the end of this, move my motion further. If it's not supported, I'll obviously be personally disappointed, as I'm sure there's people that emailed in, but that's life. We're a council and we'll make a decision on that. So I'll just flag that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I think, as Councillor Dean said, that the motion from KBAC was quite black and white, the way the recommendation was put forward, and I guess as a result, the staff response also had to be a yes or no answer. But I would really like to reach compromise, and there's already been lots of ideas passed around the table, but I think that any decision really needs to be informed with the help of staff, so that's why I'd be very supportive of deferring or getting an options paper from staff. I think what hasn't really been raised is there's plenty of people who skate, like mums, dads or kids, who would respect the horrors, who would respect the area, and they're the ones missing out at the moment. It's been said that there's other areas for skating, but we've seen in the health and wellbeing strategy that there's an action there to provide access to places for this specific purpose. So I think that points to the fact that at the moment we are short on these areas and they are required. So I think we'd be doing a bit of an injustice if we do just say flat out no without looking to this further. So I'd definitely be supporting Councillor Dean and anyone else who supports to defer this and have another look at it with staff.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, could you maybe advise, maybe we could do a yes or no decision tonight and then someone can put forward a nom and we can take it from there? I mean, we have clear advice from council staff. They don't want a trial. We've been asked to make a decision. Give us a trial. I am sympathetic about the fact that there should be some flat space that we have in our community that has nice concrete. And maybe there is an option, a nom, to be put forward later where we can talk about it, do a workshop, choose a location, and that could be a nice bit of community development that we can put into our budget. But for tonight, we have an issue, really. It is a yes or no decision. It's a yes or no request, but that doesn't mean we've said no to the community. It's never going to be discussed. Maybe some of the people who feel passionate can put forward a nom. We haven't had a nom here in ages. It's one of the few things councils can do to actually create a change in the community. I think it would be great. That's my perspective.
Thank you. I am very much in the hands of councillors now because there's been a foreshadowing of a deferral motion, but I don't have a deferral motion. We also do have the issue that, and we're still in discussion at the moment, but we also do have the issue that we would need to separate out A and B so that we still pass A, which is noting the minutes of KBAC. So I'm in everyone's hands as to how we proceed. Councillor Fox.
Can we defer the entire motion because there is no deadline for us having to pass the minutes of the committee in the absence of the chair? Can we defer the entire motion?
We can, if that's the will of the meeting. Councillor Dean.
Look, I wholeheartedly agree with Councillor Antoli. A notice of motion can come up. The risk here is that I would not be supporting the motion because I do not want to retain the permanent signage. I want us to at least have the consideration of it. So we would then risk the minutes not be passed if there were people that wanted to be of that opinion. So I think we can just... The outcome is the same. We'll be presented with options by council staff on whether a trial under certain circumstances is possible. We will then discuss it and then approve or not approve it. Whether it's a notice of motion or it's deferred, staff are going away and going to do that. So it just seems... Why not just defer?
Yep. Well, if somebody wants to move that motion, it's a procedural motion. You need to put it. Yep. No, but we'll come out of discussion if you.
Can't we just move to strike B and then vote, and then it's.
And I'll move a note of motion later. Fine. Let's do that.
Yep. Isn't that the?
Hang on. Sorry. Too many people talking. All right. Councillor Cordova makes a good point. Then that we could with the. With the acceptance by the mover and seconder, we could amend the recommendation that is on the screen at the moment to delete Part B. Yes, we could do that.
And, and what, replace it with
no,
something?
No, that doesn't help us.
We can just remove B.
Yeah, and then we just bring it.
Can I suggest that we put a
yes,
C in there?
Yes, that does help us.
Can I suggest we put a C in there and say that council understands there is a need in the community and is going to investigate a long-term solution that doesn't affect the hub and the staff?
Can we put in a C request?
Look, we can do whatever we like. I'm getting...
Well, that's my suggestion.
Yeah.
And it gives KBAC hope, and it also gives the community hope, oh, they're actually going to probably give us something that could be better than the hub.
The alternative... Yes, Councillor Claydright.
I have to do this so you see me.
Yep.
Sitting over here. Could we just add in C, which says, and we request a report by council on some options, and then we don't need to bring a motion later on.
I'd be happy to support that.
And we have a workshop about it before we get to here would probably then be useful.
I'd be happy to support that.
Okay, so you're the mover, so you are happy to support that. Councillor Bain, as the seconder, are you happy to support that?
Go for it, Amanda.
Put your microphone on, please.
That council request a...
That's, how about staff provide a report to councillors to consider at a workshop the options for... the alternative options for... Yeah, we've got to say about what, because it could be about the minutes otherwise. The alternative options for
a trial...
For the trial of skating and rollerblading, I don't know, it's getting, we're in the weeds.
Maybe alternative options for the community, something like that.
For the community, okay, take out trial of, Is that clear enough, though? Because we're not actually saying what it's about. What?
Use of the space by the community.
Thank you. By the community. Okay, so is that... So Councillor Antol is the mover. You're happy with that? Thank you. Councillor Bain as seconder, are you happy with that?
It is clear at sea that we're talking about roller skating and these activities.
Yep.
Okay, I'm happy.
Okay, so can we come out of discussion now? And all right, okay, I'll need somebody to move that we come out of discussion. Move Councillor Gladright, seconding Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. We're now back on the motion, and we have an amendment that has been accepted by the mover and the seconder. So Councillors Antoli and Bain have accepted an amendment which reads, a new point C, request staff provide a report to councillors to consider at a workshop the alternative options for the use of the space by the community. So that is now the substantive motion, and are there any contributions on that? No? Okay. Councillor Antoli, did you want to sum up? No? I'm going to put the motion as printed on the screen. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Thank you. That takes us to page 125, appendices, with a recommendation on page 125 as well. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladright and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Any questions? No? Okay. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page 125, no notices of motion. And confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. In accordance with Regulation 15, the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moves into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, and Kingborough Sports Centre precinct future development. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. That brings us to the end of the open session of Council. So thank you very much to those members of the community who have been with us here this evening, and to those watching along at home. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meeting Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting